solo no, la hora sonó, la hora sonó. No permitiremos más, más tu doctrina del shock. La hora sonó, 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 la hora sonó.
La solución a nuestro problema, otra termoeléctrica.
De chilenos a la calle, mapuches, estudiantes y docentes reclamando al gobierno una mejor educación.
Golpe a golpe, verso a verso, con las ganas y el aliento, con cenizas, con el fuego del presente, con recuerdo, con certeza y con desgarro, con el objetivo claro, con memoria y con la historia, el futuro es ahora. Todo este tubo de ensayo, todo este laboratorio que a diario, todo este fallo, todo este económico modelo condenado de dinosaurio, todo se criminaliza, todo se justifica en la noticia, todo se quita, todo se pisa, todo se ficha y clasifica. Pero tu política y tu táctica, tu típica risa y ética, tu comunicado manipulado, ¿cuántos fueron los callados? Pago guanacos y lumas, pago guanacos y tunas, pago guanacos nos fuman, ¿cuántos fueron los que se robaron las fortunas? Tus monólogos, tus discursos incoloros, no ves que no estamos solos, millones de polo a polo, al son de un solo coro, marcharemos con el tono, con la convicción, que basta de robo, tu estado de control, tu trono podrido de oro, tu política y tu riqueza y tu tesoro, no, la hora sonó, la hora sonó, no permitiremos más, más tu doctrina del shock.
You're my earth. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
Beautiful. I love her music. And we opened with Michelle Indiocello, with our theme song, Earth. And you are tuned to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis in studio with
Paulette Spencer.
And this is Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And for those of you who are burning over the election results, we thought it might be an interesting time to talk about some of that. And so you are welcome to join us in that conversation, most certainly. And, hey, so Paulette, you have a bit of a report to tell us about the election.
Well, just sort of surveying the news over the past 24 hours, I was reading online that I think they estimated some 3 million people statewide were eligible to vote but could not yesterday. And the reasons were, in some cases, people had not registered as Democrats and may not have known that the deadline to register was in October 2015.
Wait.
Yes. October 2015.
Wow. Whoa, that's a long time ago.
Yes.
And I was surprised that there were so many people who had issues with elections throughout the state.
Yes, indeed. And 3 million. And in addition to that, I read, well, not in addition, included in that 3 million, I read this evening that 124,000 people in Brooklyn alone had that same had a problem. In some cases, in many cases, either people were registered as Democrats and they'd show up at the voting place and then learn that their voting party had somehow changed to undecided and they couldn't vote.
That's very interesting, very, very interesting. And so it makes a lot of sense to me because actually the count was fairly close in the Democratic race. So I think that perhaps it is that it might have been reversed had everyone had an opportunity to actually vote. Wow. So it's interesting. I went to vote yesterday. I didn't have any issues whatsoever. But I did notice that as I was leaving, the line was getting longer and longer. So I was very hopeful. I was thinking, oh, people are really showing up to vote. But maybe the line was getting longer because people were having problems.
Maybe.
That's a very distinct possibility. So, what is your take on what's going on? There's something very, should I use the word fishy, with electoral politics in the United States these days? But that would be an insult to a fish, wouldn't it? I won't use
Let's
the word
not
fishy.
Insult the fish.
Let's not insult the fish. but it's really kind of quite an amazing, amazing, amazing thing. Because I didn't expect the election to go quite as it went. But I'm not surprised given the fact that 3 million people. And what was really interesting, though, it seems that most of the state did go for Bernie Sanders. And the, you know, the big cities are the ones that went very heavily for Hillary Clinton. At least that's the way it looked when I last saw the primary results. And of course, our other friend from New York did very well, the Republican.
I understand that. Yeah, we're living in, as the Chinese would say, very interesting times.
Yeah, very, very interesting times. And I makes me, it's fascinating, really, when you look at how desperate these parties are to have their way and to get over. And there's really no shame whatsoever ever on either side. There's no shame. There's no consideration of what the actual citizens of the country desire, for the most part. And so it'll be an interesting event as things go on. Now, I don't know. It may be that Hillary Clinton will win the election if she's running against Donald Trump. But I'm feeling that she might not, and that he might actually win.
I have no idea. And I mean, personally, I think that the sort of progressive, in quotes, political sector needs to have something to kind of light a fire underneath them so that you know, they sort of raised their voices again. I think they've been silent for a rather long time.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, something as potentially shocking as all of this is might be the thing to kind of bring them back to a certain awareness that there may be certain shortfalls to identity politics.
Well, I guess that is true. I guess that that's very true. And one of the things that I find rather frustrating about all of these elections is that people get very excited in the race, like you were saying, and then they go back to sleep once it's over. And I think that's what happened in the previous elections. So it'll be interesting. It may be better. The outcome may be better to have someone truly adversarial in the White House. But I recognize that that's probably going to cause a lot of pain and suffering for somebody on the globe.
I realize that.
Yeah.
I unfortunately, in either case, if it's a Clinton or the other person, I think in both scenarios, people are going to feel it on the other side of the globe. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like we have a phone call, and I didn't give out the number yet. Let's see if it's our call. But the number is 718-780-8888. And hello, you're on the air. Hello? Oh, wait. Yes, you're on the air.
I don't want to be on the air. I just have a request for a future show.
Well, this is not the number. Sorry. Yeah, we don't take requests for programs. You have to speak to the program director for that. And the best way to do that would be to send an email to pd@wbai.org if you want to create a show or uncreate a show. That would be the way to do it. The number here is 718-780-8888. Hello, you're on the air. Hello? Whoops.
Are you? Hello?
Yes. Go right ahead.
Hi. Okay, hi. My name is Audrey, and I'm in the Bedford-Stuyvesant district. This is 36. And not only were 44,000 names just disappeared from the Democrats from the listing of the voting, 12,000 were just dropped and four were sent to the iPod. But I'm not surprised. I'm a little insulted in a sense because this has happened before when President Obama was running first and second times. But an assemblywoman in my district, Annette Robinson, she put out a notice prior to the primaries back in January to let folks know that 100,000 names have been dropped. And I've checked, and not only my mom's name was dropped off the list, but I got her back on before the primaries. but it's insulting to, I think, as citizens of this United States, and particularly African Americans. Not no one else is important, but the fight that was put forth for civil rights and voting, registration, whatever, is insulting because I'm going to vote, although, you know, because I was, that's how I was raised, but had I not been aware of our ancestors, I would not vote because it's insulting because, bottom line, money rules in this country. But the lines were long, and I'm sorry that folks had to go through what they went through, but there was one elder citizen that she went down to the court before the polls closed and got an affidavit that allowed her to vote. But it's really discouraging, and I just want to say to the young folks, just vote because one day it's going to count. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have another call, two calls standing by. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the radio.
Yeah, I have, first of all, a correction to what was said on the radio, then a question. The correction is somebody said on the radio that the race between Clinton and Sanders was close. That's not accurate. Clinton
I
won
agree.
By a very large margin.
Clinton won by, about 10%.
Yes, that's a fairly large margin. That's not a close race.
It depends on how you look at it. On the Republican side, Donald Trump got 60% to the next person on that side who got 25%. So I guess it depends on how one looks at the analysis.
No, well, a close race would be 51% to 49%, 52% to 48%.
Okay, whatever.
The second question I have is I'm curious about your response. You talked about Sanders doing well in rural areas and Clinton doing better in urban areas.
That's what it looks like according to
me. Well, my understanding is the reason why Clinton did so much better in urban areas is because she got the majority of the African-American and Hispanic vote.
I think that that's true.
So
I
the
agree.
Question is, why do you think that happened? If you think that Sanders is the more progressive candidate, then the question is, why did African-Americans and Hispanics vote for Clinton over Sanders? And I'll take your answer over the air. Thank you.
Sure. Hold on. I think it's a combination of things. Tradition, misinformation, regressive politics, voting for the woman as over the man, I think might be it. Not knowing who Bernie Sanders is. I think there are any number of reasons, and familiarity with Hillary Clinton. So I think that that's true, whatever the reason might be. In urban areas and states with large black votes, Bernie Sanders is not getting those votes proportionally as Hillary, and it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think that there was some sort of commentary, I don't know if I want to call it criticism, that Bernie Sanders actually concentrated much of his campaigning on a certain demographic.
Not in New York, though. In New York, his demographic was definitely black and Latino. Huh. His campaigning in New York was black and Latino.
But was it late in the game? That's the question.
Well, it I don't know. For me, it wasn't. But then I'm aware of what's happening. I think for many people who are out there living in the city, they depend on mainstream media. They're not listening to alternative media. And so they're looking at the mainstream media. They're not familiar with Bernie Sanders. They don't have the same middle class issues that many of the suburban New York have. And it's certainly in urban areas, there are issues of poverty. There are a lot of issues that are different than in a suburban middle class region. So I think all those certainly played a factor. And I'm not saying that I agree with those votes, but it is what it is. Let's see, we have another person on the line. It, you know, it's not like black people are a monolith. We all have one thought at the same time.
Exactly.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you are live on the air.
I know. This is Clarence from Brooklyn. How you doing?
I'm good, Clarence. How you doing?
I'm with mixed emotions. I am pissed off, excuse the expression, with the misleaders in Brooklyn, in the Fort Greene area. Radical Street is the public advocate. There's Radical Street from my building. She has said a mumbling word. Only one has said anything was Scott Stringer. He's the comptroller. He's saying he wants to have the Board of Elections audited.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't say, if you find illegalities going on, that he would push for indictments.
Well, because, it's all part of the game, you know. They're talking about, they want to make sure when the election comes back around and it's a straight-up Republican, Democratic, I won't say conflict battle, but race, they want to make sure that everybody has their votes in that scenario.
Yeah.
But I don't hear anyone talking about rectifying the election that has already taken place.
I hate to say it, but understand this. It's deja vu all over again. You remember, and no one wants to recall, it seems like, when George W. stole the election in Florida.
Sure. Yeah, we remember that.
Of course.
And then worse, 2004 in Ohio, where a black man named Ken Blackwell, who was Secretary of State at the time, to assure Bush that he would be a second-term president, that he promised him to do all that he could to help him be a second-term president. He disenfranchised his own black people in Ohio. Not a mumbling word from the NAACP, the Congressional Black Caucus, the leading black pastors in Ohio to light the fire, to the pastors that supposed to have been members of the Progressive Baptist Convention. Not a mumbling word.
Well, I think that's something for black people to look at. I'm glad you're bringing it up.
My dear sister, my people love to be misled, starting with the spiritual leaders, so-called spiritual leaders, who I dare say have morphed into becoming ecclesiastical pimps.
Wow.
And it's clear that the selected officials, I don't call them elected officials, I call them selected officials, because the city councilwoman in this area, Lori Cumbo, I maintain between her and Tish James are empty dresses, including this fellow with the one with the tall with the beard, Robert Carnegie, is an empty suit. They do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They say nothing. Especially do anything to embarrass white supremacy. Their style has been decimated with the interlopers. They call them gentries, but I call them interlopers because they're not moving into Bed-Stuy because of the Brotherhood of Man. They're not in Fort Greene because of the Brotherhood of Man. They're in this area because Brooklyn has become the back door to Manhattan because Manhattan is no longer affordable for the average schmuck who might just be making maybe about $50,000, $75,000 a year. And some of them might be making just slightly a little over $100,000, but they are forced to move into an area that they were assured that the virus would be rid of. Guess who the virus is?
Black and brown people,
yeah.
Of course. Well, you know, I happen to live in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn.
Oh, boy.
And I've actually lived in that area for almost 30 years now. Mm-hmm. So when I moved into the area, it was very working class. But the plan was already in place because that's when I moved in, there were a lot of rent strikes. People were being pushed out of their buildings. Landlords were creating problems in the buildings. Even my landlord, we went to 3 or 4 landlords early on, all kinds of chaos, people being robbed. At one point, they broke down the basement and allowed rats into the building. They were doing all kinds of things to get rid of people.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, rent stabilization, I hung in there. But what happened is that gradually, well, maybe not so gradually, things kept changing, kept changing, kept changing. But what I found was really, really interesting, in one of these interim landlord situations, there was this one fellow who was trying to, you know, get higher paying tenants into the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bemoaning to me that he couldn't get people to come into the building because all of the rich people, I won't give the description, but the rich people on the Park Slopes side of Flatbush refused to move to the other side of Flatbush. Now, Park Slope and Prospect Heights are back-to-back neighbors, straight up, same street, same place. There's just there was just this dividing line, and I was on the poor side of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to move over there. But gradually, the texture and tenor of the neighborhood changed, and before you knew it, I was one of the few remaining brown faces, black faces in the neighborhood. So, yeah, you're right. Brooklyn has been transformed into a very lucrative real estate for many, including the Barclay, Atlantic Avenue Barclay Center.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming before.
You know, it's like it's really quite amazing. So I agree with you that people who are heading these districts had to have abdicated any of their rights or any potential for fighting for people's rights in order for this to have happened.
You recall the...
Vaguely.
This is the building on Prospect Avenue and Clarkson. I was born there. It'll be 70 years ago, in January.
Mm.
And when it became, it was Brooklyn Jewish Hospital.
Right.
When Jews in the area began letting blacks to come into the hospital as patients, there was very few Jews coming to the hospital as inpatients. They had a lot of Jewish doctors, but not Jewish patients.
Hmm.
Now, the hospital now closed down years ago, and it became a condo. Extremely 99, 100% gentries. Even made it so possible that you could have a restaurant on the premises adjoined to the building. Okay? And this is a huge building. It became out of reach for the average schmuck living in Crown Heights. Now, the late Clarence Norman, Father Harum Sam, they fought the Hasidics in Crown Heights because of the very, very odious racism that they had, such hatred for black people. And unbeknown to blacks, there's a word, a Yiddish word, which means subhuman. It's pronounced goids, G-O-I-D-S.
You know, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't want to get into classifying a group of people in this way, because...
Well, that's the problem.
It may be the problem, but the truth of the matter is that you can't classify a whole group
truth,
of people.
The just
but listen to me. You just started out talking about the black leaders that sold black people out.
Yeah.
Would you want all black people to be classified by those folk who are willing to sell us out? Well, then in the same way, I don't think it's appropriate for you or I or anyone to get on the air and presume anything about a group of people, be they Hasidics or otherwise,
and look at
if you're going to use that level of detail in terms of black leaders, then I expect you to use that level of detail for any group of people, and I'm not going to allow you to come on.
I'm going to say that black people never had political
protection.
It matters when you deal with people who don't consider you human beings.
It matters when this is a show that I'm hosting and I'm asking you to respect this.
You will watch the complete takeover of Brooklyn by those same people who believe and defy that black people are subhuman, and they have the right to take over our community.
All right, thank you. Sorry. Can't have it. Just can't. I understand you have a right to your opinion, but I'm not going to purvey racism on any level towards any beings. Just not going to do it. Let's take another call. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Are you there? Yes, you're live on the air.
Am I live right now?
You are live on the air. Yes, you are.
All right. I just wanted to comment on Anna Tiju. She's still there?
Oh, no. You go.
Oh, yeah, because I'm in L.A.
Yeah. Go to the website, WB, to listen to the week. Find out all about their concerts.
Yeah, what are you talking about? You're talking about some of...
We're talking about the election shenanigans.
You're talking about some of this...
Yeah. But it's called Heart Night, and we speak about issues of the heart, integrity from the perspective of spiritual, but we still need to live with integrity.
We still need to very much.
Okay.
Yes, right now...
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
My heart is broken, and it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, that's what we were talking... Like, we've had a couple of commentaries about positions, but that there are people going heavily in the urban areas. Now, that hasn't been my personal experience that's the case.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking there may be some of that. But also there is, in New York City, we had, what was it, 3 million? No, how many in Brooklyn?
124,000.
124,000 people were not able to cast their ballots in Brooklyn, New York alone. And across the state, 3 million people were not able to cast their ballots. So
due to what?
So that means that there's some deeply troubling things going on in the electoral system in America.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And you know what? I will be 1,000% against Trump to win.
Yeah.
But yet if this man wins elections here, it probably will be the best thing that America has. And I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
This man is the sin in my life. And if he gets elected, there is definitely something wrong with this nation. The people are happy with this man. Oh, my God. I will move out of this country. I will definitely move out of this nation.
Well,
oh, I'm sorry.
You might have to rethink this in the White House. If you're not in the country, you might be find yourself underneath a bomb.
Oh,
or
well.
Underneath...
Well, if I go back to where I'm from...
Am I being extreme? A little?
Yeah, no. But if I go back to where I'm from...
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Central America.
Yeah.
If I go back to where I'm from,
yeah.
We're puppeteers from whoever comes into power in the U.S. The power in my country, they're just puppets.
Yeah.
So whatever politics happens here, they're puppets over there, no matter who it is.
Yeah,
good,
you know.
Bad, the ugly.
That is the truth, but I think that's what's happening here as well. When we look at our representatives at the lower level of government, they're just puppets. Nobody is really standing up with a level of integrity, and everybody's just playing the game.
Look, no integrity, no rationale.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say, like, with the lowest part of intelligence possible in politics, yeah, I've seen it now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was ever going to see it, because when I was in high school and I was listening to people telling me about, like, political science and stuff, I never thought I was going to see what has happened here in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's not like it went up since Bush to Obama to now this man possibly having a possibility of winning elections. Oh, my God.
It's bad. But you know, the thing of it is that it will keep people active, won't it? People won't be going so quickly to sleep and not paying attention. So maybe
I do hope so. You were right about Clinton. Clinton, I'm very skeptical about her. But and I don't know about Sanders. I mean, that's the whole dilemma. Because honestly, I could vote. Finally, I could vote now, and I'm confused. And
well,
I hope I make the right choice.
keep paying. You know, pay attention and read and look and see what each person, not only what they say they're going to do, look at their record and see what they've done. So yeah. That's how the reason I ended up questioning Clinton, because when I looked at what she did when she was Secretary of State, is that she supported a lot of war. When I look at what she has done in terms of her campaign, I see that there's money going into her campaign that comes from corporations that have been toxic to the planet, not supportive of human life. And so when you're taking money from a company like Monsanto, or you're taking money from Wall Street lawyers, then I have to wonder, is this person actually going to look after my interests? So then I look at the other candidates, you know, Bernie Sanders or some of the other candidates. They might not be as well known. But if I look at Bernie Sanders' record, he's 70 years old. Did you know that he was marching on Washington with Martin Luther King?
Yeah, he was.
He was voting. He was making... So. For me, it's the record.
See,
so,
for him, it's I think so far right now, he's probably my best candidate. His age might be, and I'm not trying to be discriminatory about his age, but his age might be a problem. But I think, like I tell you, this is probably gonna be my first time voting, and I'm looking at Sanders probably being the best bet.
Well, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm just saying my method is to look at a person's record. And
I have. And I've looked at Clinton.
And the other. I have.
I don't need to look. I really don't really need to look at the other kid, Trump. He's just the goofiest person I've ever seen on television. So I that.
But I think he does
no,
that
no,
on purpose.
But
okay. Oh, we have another call coming in. So thank you so much for calling.
No problem.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, I put someone on hold, but maybe that's... Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, I'd just like to say...
You're on the air.
Hello, I'd just like to say that, you know, black people are walking around like they're mesmerized. They want the next photo op. They're not, you know, the leaders are plugged in also because they want to get their crumbs from the table and they really don't even care about what happens to us. So they employ these so-called black leaders to go and come to their churches and come to the neighborhood. And black people are walking, just because somebody tells you something doesn't make it true. People can promise you anything, but you have to look at what somebody actually does. And this whole thing with Donald Trump, I wouldn't be surprised because, first of all, these people are highly technical. They could have planned this whole thing even with Donald Trump to set, you know, to distract us from what's really going on, where Hillary Clinton would have to be. People are saying, oh, she's the lesser of two evils. But that's not the way that you should look at it. You should be looking at it from why all of a sudden now is she so pro-black and she wants to get jobs for us and everything, when she and her husband have been the proponent of making sure that our boys are in jail, that the industrial complex, she's a part of that. She's getting paid. So if Hillary Clinton wins, she's in there to make sure that her and her husband keep making money and that their friends continue to make money. The people on the bottom, the poor people, they don't even care about it. It just disgusts me that black people are, oh, Hillary, as if Hillary cares about us. It's sick. It's like a child who needs attention and would go and grovel and just have somebody notice them. They're satisfied. And we're very immature as a people, very immature. And we have a lot of growing up to do. And that's my opinion.
Interesting. I'm inclined to say you're making a lot of sense. So thank you for your input.
I would add that perhaps there are people who are voting out of fear rather than out of actually examining the issues and politicians' track records. I mean, I think that some would say that people sort of identify, you know, the Republican Party with a certain caste, you know, mm-hmm. be that racial or economic, and see the Democrats as sort of traditionally, you know, for another caste, and feel that if they don't vote Democrat, that something bad can happen. So it might be out of fear, it might be many other things, but perhaps that's an element that figures into it all.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I don't think that it's an unfortunate truth. But from my perspective as well, there really needs to be engagement between elections. And I think therein lies the real problem. Because we have a media that will lie to people and that twist the statistics and blow up their side of the story, whatever they want to purvey. And so we have a culture that is accustomed to relaxing in front of the TV. There is a broader culture beyond shows, programs such as a station such as WBAI, where people actually consider that when they're watching the news, they're getting news. And so it's really I could see how this is happening. But there needs to be some engagement between elections. You can't educate people in the short time it takes to of a primary season. It needs to happen. Like when this election is over, people have to start moving into that phase of educating and expanding and talking to people and really getting out into communities in a real way. I mean, even people like Bernie Sanders, and, you know, he seems like a likable enough chap, but he's only in black neighborhoods because he's running for president. It's not like he would have gone there otherwise. And so somebody needs to go into poor communities where you find many black and brown people and Caucasian people and begin to really educate. And that's, I suppose, the mission of BAI. We have to improve our reach. Hello, you're on the air. Please turn off your radio. Yes.
Yeah, it's off. Okay.
Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is Professor Rhythm. And so I was wanted to just weigh in on some of the stuff that even you were talking about as far as Bernie Sanders. I think, well, I was for him too because, you know, I mean, he's the only one, of course, who's talking about some of the real problems that, you know, the people that really are concerned about where, how come they're still poor and how come they don't have anything, it's, you know, it's because all the rich people are taking everything. So, you know, like a lot of people know that, but they don't, you know, they're not really internalizing it properly. So when you have somebody that comes out and actually says it and puts it out there in your face, and then you're like, oh, well, yeah, isn't that's true. And, you know, we had like remnants of people like, you know, Occupy Wall Street and, you know, that, you know, we're saying the same thing. So, you know, Bernie, of course, you know, since, you know, he might probably not win the nomination and so therefore won't be president, but it would be a good idea if he would keep the momentum going about how he was going about his campaign, you know, because, you know, if he would, you know, if he or people that were interested in what he was doing would form some kind of organization where people could contribute like they were contributing to his campaign for different ideas that he was coming forth with, and then at the same time start to further those kinds of ideas, then I think, you know, people would see another alternative as to what is actually going on now, and in which everybody is just like throwing up their hands and saying, well, there's nothing that can be done, it's all rigged, and it's all this, and you know, so if you keep saying that, well, then actually nothing will be done. But since we had something started here with a Bernie Sanders type of campaign, socialist, you know, actually talking about socialism and, you know, as a word, not really as anything particularly except a word to try to describe what should be done as far as economics go, for so that more people can so things can be distributed more equally. So, you know, that's basically about what, you know, he and the people around him, I think, should do and continue, even as the Miss Hillary does become president, because I don't think Trump will get in. Even the powers that be wouldn't really like him to get in. He did a great campaign and it shows the, you know, I have an affiliation with every human being on this planet. So when I say things, I'm not even trying to say things to castigate anybody, because mm-hmm. I understand that I'm the same thing. I'm it. I'm the human race, and that's what everybody is who's human.
Yeah.
So you know, when you see people that you know, they say, oh, they don't understand, oh, they're stupid, or oh, is this group? I like what you were telling the other gentleman about, you know, the CDs, they're, you know, they think people are. Everybody in their own way has these little things that they think, and sometimes they're perpetrated through a whole culture of telling others this and saying that, oh, well, you're a part of our clan, so you must think this way. And, you know, all these things are in what is humankind. And, you know, and these are things that we're trying to get rid of as we evolve and as our minds, you know, start to get a little bit more aware of where we're actually going instead of being stuck where we are. Like, you know, the Buddha would say, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. hey, you know, you're where you are because that's where you want to be. But if you want to be, you know, further, then just expand your mind further. That's all. It's, you know, it's not.
Well, I appreciate your contribution, because that is really the perspective of this program, to have a more balanced view of these things. There's only one thing that I would say to your suggestion. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bernie Sanders is the one who's going to hold this flag or this torch. How old is the guy? 70? I think mm-hmm. what we need to do is people like yourself mm-hmm. and ourselves have to be the ones who
are
going to...
I'm 66.
Well, okay, so you got 4 years before you're 70. So you got 4 years of activism left in you.
No, the reason I was talking about Bernie, I'm not even talking about him per se, but it's just that the fact that he sort of opened up an idea,
an opportunity.
Like, yes, you know, and I'm just so happy and so blessed to have lived through Obama, because, you know, like, I know all the good, bad, bad that you could say about him, but the one thing I have to say is that I've been looking, you know, through a lot of with social media, especially. I'm glad to live in this age of social media where it is too, because, you know, you can look there on your phone or anything and just look at Obama's, you know, speeches and his encounters at different events and affairs. And this guy is such a master. He's so entertaining, and he's just so on top of everything. And nobody was able to ever, they couldn't put a finger on him. But it wasn't like a Bill Clinton, who was Mr. Slick Willie, just sliding away from everything. He was really like just on top of everything. And like I said, good, bad, and indifferent about everything that he's done. You know, I believe that he did try to steer. You know, you have a ship. A ship is not going to turn on a dime. Like, you know, you want to. Why didn't he get healthcare for everybody?
I don't want to interrupt you, but we do have a couple of calls coming in. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're going to be moving on shortly to our next caller. We're just arranging for that to happen. And here we are.
Okay, we'll try to get a few more calls, and this person was waiting. Hello?
Oh, that popped my ear. Hi, Hotep.
How you doing?
Oh, my goodness, that's a loud coming on air. Boy, I want to, I tuned in the last 15, 20 minutes, and I had previously heard Rebel Diaz, and I'm somewhat out of sync with the new programming and time schedules because the community is not sort of connected when the new programming comes down. But love BAI. And just want to vibe with what I heard from a lot of the callers around the Peter Liang situation earlier. I wanted to weigh in, but somehow I couldn't get in.
So why don't you succinctly give...
Well, that's that's of course the way I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I heard your callers, who I also sync with, in terms of someone saying about the central banks and which countries didn't have or didn't have central banks and how they became targeted. That is absolutely true. And all wars are bankers' wars, and they usually fund both sides, including ISIS. So that's something for us to think about. I understand what you're saying, because I think Bernie is Catherine is actually 72, which is a small point. But I think we have to move away from, you know, because then we become, I mean, some people can keep going strong. This guy has more energy than a lot of 18-year-olds, you know. So I think we have to be careful, because one of the things I think the community might be looking toward, and you make some excellent points, you know, about, you know, he wouldn't be in the black community if it wasn't the campaign on. However, if there's a way to make a movement, you know, whatever happens in terms of the rigged system, the system where the people are selected and we elect, as it were, I think that could be very positive. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about, you know, Obama abandoned his grassroots folks, you know, once he became elected. And so there was nothing to come out of that, including opening up the prisons. But I'd like to hear your thoughts about whether a real political movement, and I'll listen over the air. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have another caller standing by, so I'd like to have you. I have another caller standing by, so I'll take that call, and then we can go back into a little dialogue. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, I'd like to also ask a question. When you were talking about gentrification before, how is it that there are buildings that have been built and are being built that only Jews can live in? I mean, we all pay our taxes. Imagine there being a project built for black people where nobody else can live but black people. So I just don't understand how we pay taxes, but they can come and they can create all these buildings for them in Brooklyn, and we can't move into them because they don't want anybody else in the buildings because of religious beliefs and everything else. We all have certain beliefs, and we all have buildings made for us especially, and nobody else can come there. So I'd like to someone to address that.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry. I have no idea what you're referring to. Racism does exist. Gentrification exists. Discrimination exists. I'm not engaging in a diatribe against Jews or anybody else. That's not my thing. So my sense is that it would be useful for black people to begin to support each other. I think it would be useful for black people to reinvest in their communities when they become capable of doing that. I think it would be useful for... I have a tendency to move towards independence. And I think that that's what black people in this country need, to have independence and self-sufficiency. And, you know, that's what I advocate for. I'm not interested in moving into a building, however it may be defined on those terms. So, and if somebody does, and there are laws of discrimination and they should be made use of. I kind of lost the first caller's question, though. Do you remember?
She asked about whether or not there is a real movement being built around.
Oh, for change.
Yeah.
I don't think that there is. I really personally don't think that there is, and that's why I'm saying that what happens is that everybody jumps into the season leading up to an election and is kind of struggling for attention. But there is, as far as I can see, no real movement. If we're talking about the black community or everyone, I don't know. It depends on whether or not the inspiration that's happening now can be sustained. Because I remember this very same upsurge in the first election that Obama ran for office. There was tremendous engagement. Once the man got into office, everybody went back to sleep. And Obama, whether you appreciate or disdain, whatever you think of his presidency, he was not engaged by the people. The people gave him a pass. That's how I feel about it. You know, we got our first black president. We're not going to criticize him. A black man in the White House, he's doing the best he can. You know, oh, they tied his hands. I hear all these stories about why the Obama administration didn't end up as fulfilling its promise. Whatever one may think of Obama, I think the greater problem is that people go back to sleep after these events. And so it may be that Bernie Sanders has created a huge movement around him, but he doesn't have control of what people do after the big lights go off and the stage goes dark. What are people going to do? That's what matters. And so that's how I feel. There may be a movement out of this. He's garnered a lot of attention, so there may be. But it depends. Depends on what people choose.
I agree.
You know, so, and as far as the issue of black people and, you know, this we've gotten a couple of calls from people who are themselves expressing racism, and who I've gotten a call on the line that we didn't put on the air that was a very toxic call. And so what happens is that really, if you are asserting that you're in support of black people, then why are you attacking black people? That's what I want to know. If you're asserting that you care about black people, then what are you doing in service of that caring for black people? I'm not interested in somebody coming on and saying it's that one's problem, they're responsible for my suffering or what I'm going through. I'm not saying that there isn't broad responsibility, but I want to know what a person is doing. I don't consider it to be an answer to the problem to attack other people, be they black, be they Jewish, be they Caucasian, be they whatever. I don't consider that to be a viable solution. So to that last caller, I would answer. Anger and hatred breeds anger and hatred. We have a caller. I don't know that you agree, but... Let's see what our... Whoops. No more. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that people get riled up because I took a very strong stance against the gentleman who wanted to castigate a certain sect of Jewish people. And I just don't think that that's appropriate. And I don't feel I need to defend that based on whatever probable scenario people call up with, like a building who doesn't let anyone in but themselves. I'm sure it's true somewhere. But that doesn't explain an entire race of people or a class of people or an individual person. It's racism on both counts.
I think that I think at the end of the day, it really does boil down to the content of a person's character rather than the color of a person's skin or their gender or their religion. I truly do think it's the content of who that person is underneath. And that's what matters at the end of the day. And we are similar and individual in so many ways that to generalize on such a wide range, I agree, is something that is a bit unfair.
Mm. Yeah, it's unfair on a lot of levels, but it's also, I feel, destructive, self-destructive, because it is a use of energy that is not fruitful. It's kind of toxic on a physiological level. To live your life with hatred, to live your life with fear, to live your life with that tendency to blame and attack other human beings. I just don't consider it to be a fruitful expression of energy. We have someone trying to call. Let's see. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. Talking about isms, I just wanted to point out a fact. Bernie Sanders was born, will be 75 this September 8th. Oh. He was born in 1941. And talking about isms and categorizing people, I heard ageism coming through and did not appreciate it. Also, when we're talking about Bernie Sanders marching with Martin Luther King, and then we're saying, well, he's only going into neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, to be president, I think that's inconsistent, incongruent, and I think that is just a wrong to do, to stain Bernie Sanders like that. And as far as a movement, the man who had suggested that, if he loses, and he probably will, you know, Obama won, okay? So let's not compare Obama's after Obama and after Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders has stirred a movement here. And I just was talking to another man today, how interesting, I should hear this twice in the same 24-hour period, who was saying, wouldn't it be wonderful to start a Bernie Sanders movement or a community that we all could have a caring, loving, alternative community after you know, and each of us in our own way, we could be loving towards someone or help somebody and be kind to someone. And that's what I wanted to add to the conversation.
Well, I'm very happy you called to add that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
I guess I am ageist at 60. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I was in the air called earlier about the Jewish people in housing. You misread me. That was not out of prejudice. I was not saying anything against Jewish people. That's not how I deal with people. I merely brought that up because you were talking about the texture of your building changing, and I did notice that there were buildings where there were only Jews in, so I was just bringing that to the attention of the audience. But I think you have been wrong to say that I am bringing some type of negative energy and that I'm trying to castigate any group of people, because that was not my intention and that's not what I do.
Well, I apologize. Let's take another call. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Good.
Did you want to speak on the air? You're live on the radio.
Okay, this is BAI?
This is BAI. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. Obviously, you don't have anything to say. Okay. We're going to go to a music after this call. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Please turn off your radio.
Okay.
Yes.
I was so happy to hear that Bernie Sanders walked in Martin Luther King, and he's the king of love, and I feel the words tonight, the word integrity, that Bernie Sanders has this integrity, and he seems to be really be calling forth for healing for this world. And a lot of people probably all around the world are rooting for him. And I like that woman that was saying, come on, black people, like, realize that, don't be taken by these words of, you know, of Hillary, and just really be strong in knowing that we have to go by the actions people take. And Bernie Sanders, I mean, when I heard tonight that he walked with the King of Love, I was thinking, wow, that's the best sign ever, you know, of somebody's integrity, like a Mandela. And, yeah, I mean, I feel sad that people don't realize that a lot of people that are in prison are probably rooting for Bernie Sanders, and they can't vote,
yeah.
And they're just stuck inside these walls. And I just hope that that people, and I also hope that people change the system. This is our chance to change the system. And also, I think Hillary Clinton is for the TPP, this TPP that's been made up behind the scenes, and we don't know a lot about. And if that goes through, with if the wrong person gets in, then we're going to see a lot more dread.
A lot more what?
Dread.
Dread. We're going to dread what we have, or what we don't have, like, as far as balance in the world. That there's so many people with the climate change, and then the wars, and just that a lot of these people that walk around with suit and ties and are making all these rules, they're getting away with crimes all the time. And these other people that are in prison, you know, they don't deserve to be there.
Yeah, well, there are so many inequities in our society. I don't know how they're going to be changed unless this movement everyone is longing for happens. And one of the reasons I was making a comparison here between Obama and the aftermath of his election is that, you know, for a lot of certainly black voters, what you're feeling right now is what we felt at that time, that this was an enormous movement for change. He was talking to people's hearts, and people invested heavily in supporting that campaign because of all that hope and all that promise.
Mm.
Now, Obama turned out not to be able, for whatever reason, to fulfill that promise, in my opinion. But
But
listen to me. What I'm saying is that what has to happen, really, is that this movement that everyone is longing for only becomes a movement in truth if all the people who are saying this stay engaged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not enough to just call into a radio show. It's not enough to have gone to the polls. And when I was speaking about that Bernie Sanders is in his 70s, what I was saying is that he may be the inspiration, but he alone can't carry anything.
Mm.
If people don't show up, it's not going to happen. So it depends on each individual staying engaged. And that's really my point.
Yes, and feeling the consciousness for the what we're going to leave this world to the youth, and I feel like that we should be concerned because a lot of people need to work and have structure and have hope. So yeah, so it's been a great night, a lot of good call-ins.
Thank you,
Kathy.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a little music break. All right, and we're just about out of time. Should I take this last call? Should I take the chance? I'm going to take the chance. Hello and welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I wanted to weigh in, and you were talking about how when Obama was elected, everybody sort of went to sleep, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's really important. The main thing that's wrong here is that citizens on the whole in this country have lost touch with their civic duty.
That's a very good point.
Now, their civic duty is to be dissenting, to hold politicians accountable, hold elected representatives accountable. you know, some of our founding fathers, they'd be rolling in their graves if they knew what was going on today. You know, we need to, you know, stop focusing so much on the ball game, you know, on the Grammys, you know, all this stuff that keeps us asleep. Turn off the TV. You know, our second full-time job as citizens in this country needs to be dissent. You know, Thomas Jefferson said that dissent is the greatest form of patriotism. Hmm.
Thank you for your call. A good way to round up the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, so let's hear another Cassandra. We're going to hear the first piece we heard, it was These Foolish Things by Cassandra Wilson. Now we're going to hear Don't Explain.
Hush now.
Wow, gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Well, we are just here, whoops, to say we'll get back to ending up with Nina Simone. But yeah. In the meantime, we wanted to say thank you for joining us in a very lively conversation. You've been listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And we are usually very quiet and contemplative. But I opened that political door, and, well, I'm not always quiet and contemplative. Sometimes I'm raucous and have a lot to say. And I am grateful to all of you for participating, and thank you, Paulette, for helping to instigate that conversation.
You're most welcome. Anytime.
Hey, it's the times we're living in, really.
Yes, indeed.
It's just the times we're living in. Stay tuned for our next program, Hour of the Wolf, I believe, with Ken Gale. Stay tuned.
Hello. Oh, yeah. I'm glad to see you. Glad to see you. They tell me it's a full house.
Nina Simone.
This is a good time to introduce you to the heartbeat of our organization. And the pulse of everything that we do is centered around the drums. And of course, if you think about that really seriously, you know that your entire life is centered around your heartbeat. And that's rhythm, is it not? This song was, I was told to sing by Miriam Makeba. And she is my dear friend, and it is a prayer. Those of you who are fans of hers will remember this song. West wind blow ye gentle, all the souls of yesterday. Got each gallant warrior's claim. got each gallant warrior's claim. 'Cause I am the soil from which they came. I am the soil from which they came. So west wind, with your splendor, take my people by the hand. Spread your glory, sunshine.
Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Coming up next is Hour of the Wolf with your substitute host, Ken Gale. So stay tuned. All right. Why isn't this going?
Must be the next one. Turn on the light.
Oh no, my CD went blank. I was so looking forward to playing this.
No, it's not blank.
Well, this is Ken Gale, and Jim Freund is not in today because I'm not sure why. But anyway, I'm going to be substituting for Hour of the Wolf, and I'll be playing comic book stuff, except this time I'll be interviewing, and I have two absolutely wonderful people to talk to. And I'll have them introduce themselves so that you have voices to go with the names. Jim, let's start with you.
No, ladies first.
We are doing ladies first, he said you.
I'm Jim Salakrup. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cuts, a publisher dedicated to producing great graphic novels for all ages.
I'm Shelley Mayer. My grandfather was Golden Age cartoonist, editor, and writer Sheldon Mayer, and I am the direct result of what happens when you're raised by a cartoon, which I was. And I sculpt and animate and doodle and write on stuff and make clothes and play with everything.
Okay, let me see this going.
Cyclops, angel, and Doctor Strange. I want to be like them from the age of 16. I want
All right, that's better. Some of our equipment works when you want it to, and some of our equipment does not work when you want it to.
Yes, send WPAI more money.
Yeah, we definitely need more people to repair equipment. I don't know what happened there, but the bottom line is it did finally play. And that was the Tearjerkers, a band out of Belfast that did that song decades ago. See, I was using it as the theme to Enough Said back in 1993, so the song certainly predates that. And so anyway, back to our guests. Now, Jim has worked at Marvel Comics for 20 years and is now editing a whole bunch of different kinds of comics. And Shelley's grandfather, Sheldon Mayer, is one of my favorite people in the entire history of this art form. There's no doubt. Also, one of my favorite people. I got to interview him for DC back in 75, and we got to become friends and used to call him every once in a while and got a lot of writing advice from him. Amazing man. Guest of honor at my convention in 78. And basically, every single female staffer fell madly in love with him. And Jim, you knew Shelley, right?
Sheldon? No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, well, you missed out.
Exactly. There are people you're aware of who are alive the same time you are. And I lump him together with people such as Dr. Seuss and many others that I wish I could have met at my, I probably had the opportunity, but I somehow it just never worked out, and I regret that.
But we got to share Irwin.
Oh, very lucky. So I've been very, very lucky with so many people I've gotten to know, so many of my heroes. Irwin Hazen, who is probably best known in New York for the guy who illustrated the Dondi comic strip, which was on the back page of the Sunday News throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, and he was quite a character in his own right, and Shelley could probably talk more about him than I ever could.
A lot of personality into that little body of his.
Yeah, and he was good friends with your grandfather, right?
They were best
friends.
Very
best friends, yeah.
Yeah, he babysat my mom, and he would come over a whole bunch, and he worked on the Flash under him. They used to get into T-square fights on the desk in the offices that Infantino got to witness on his first interview. It's like, what am I into?
That's right. Carmine Infantino, who is one of the great Silver Age artists in history of comics, passed away a couple of years ago. And in fact, I did an obituary with Robert Knight, the show before this one, way back then. And yeah, young Carmine, he's like a teenager, and he's being interviewed by, editor of DC Comics, and he wants to break into the industry. And while he's having this talk about trying to get work, all of a sudden, Irwin comes running in to have a sword fight with T-Squares. And then, sword fight's over, Irwin leaves the office, and Sheldon Mayer gets back to interviewing this young artist.
But it was a long one, I heard, like 30 minutes of...
I didn't hear it being that long, or maybe it's lengthened over time. Or, but yeah.
I hear Carmine was, what am I getting myself into? I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, and he had become the publisher of that company he was interviewing for.
Yes.
As a teenager. But it's interesting because in the 70s and 80s, people used to describe Marvel Comics as being that kind of place. People are roller skating down the hallway and filling their offices with crumpled paper. And
I think sometimes, the way people say the best year in comics is the year when they were 11 years old, reading the comic books.
Right.
I think.
And the golden age of baseball is when you're 13.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, the period that they worked in comics is always looked back fondly as, that was the best of times. And because being there 20 years, I managed to be there through several different, incarnations in a sense. And, I enjoyed every different version. They all had their,
pluses and minuses, but it's when you have creative people, you don't want to, you know, have an environment that's like a bank or an insurance company. Not that I have anything against that, but you know, you want to. I when people sometimes ask me what an editor does, I say it's to create an environment that's conducive to creativity. So whatever it takes, you want to keep artists and writers happy and motivated, and you just have fun. If it's like if the creators of the comics aren't enjoying what they're doing, then how can the audience possibly like it? I mean, the reality is creating comics is an incredibly difficult task, and the artists, the writers, they have to spend all the people working on it, the letterers, the colorists, have to spend incredible amounts of time working around the clock by themselves, isolated. So when they get together, you know, they're going to want to have as much fun as possible.
But somehow in the middle of working isolated by yourself and not meeting, there has to be a continuity which is created. And it's not super easy to do.
And I'm also thinking about that 20 years of Marvel went from the early 70s to the early 90s. And you saw a lot of changes in the industry.
Well, as a kid, I had two dreams, basically. I was growing up in the Bronx, and it was during the 60s, which was a very turbulent time. And my dream was to live in Manhattan. And the other dream was to work for the Marvel bullpen. And by the time I actually got in, even though I was 15 years old, the Marvel bullpen that I dreamed of working for was already sort of fading away. You know, Stan was promoted. Stan Lee was promoted to publisher. Roy Thomas was the new editor-in-chief. But it still had a lot of the people.